business.
Hello?
We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Next Fan Up, the podcast by the fans for the fans. This is Justin, your Sunday host, your Seahawks super fan. We got a good show ahead of us. I'm being joined by Rob right now, our Bills super fan. What's happening, Rob?
I'm just hanging out in Florida, looking forward. Bills are going to start 1-0 this year, and then after that, it's going to be a free for all.
Oh man, that's good
we
stuff.
We play the Jets.
Nice. So auto win. Yeah, I mean, you get to play them twice, so you can just pretty much pencil in 2-0 right off the bat. All right, and then we have Chicago Tom, our Chicago Bears super fan. What is happening, Tom? I feel like it's been too long since we've talked.
It's been way too long. I think it's been like December, so hopefully I'll be able to plug in and talk to you a little bit more on some of these Sunday shows from here on out during the fall. Let's hope so.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's a lot of fun.
Agreed. All right, so on today's show, you know, we're into finishing up week 2 of the preseason, so there's not a ton of news. You know, roster sizes are massive, so there's so many transactions that probably don't matter that much. We're not going to go too deep into those. We are going to talk a couple of news items. We're going to check in with all of our teams and how their preseasons are going from our perspective since we got these super fans on here. Then I do want to talk a little bit about watching preseason in general, especially with Rob and Tom. We have two of our best educated football watchers on here. So, you know, I want to kind of talk to you guys a little bit about what you watch for in games. I know you're watching a lot more than just the scoreboard, especially when we get into like the threes and some like the fours. Probably not that worried about the final score. So I want to talk about that. But first, the news. All right. Pretty much two news items I think are interesting. And we're going to start with the one that I think is a little bit bigger news. Tom, you know the Dolphins really, really well. So I'm going to have you comment on this. Ray Maluga is in Miami competing at starting linebacker. Everybody knows him. He's been a Cincinnati Bengal forever. He's taking over for a rookie, Raekwon McMillan, who tore his ACL. It sounds to me, Tom, like they were really counting on Raekwon McMillan to be their starting linebacker. Is that right?
Yeah, that team, I mean, it's really interesting, the situation in their front seven, really the last few years. Every single Dolphins fan knows that they stink against the run, and last year was particularly bad. There are two reasons for that. One is a chronic problem, in my opinion, at the defensive tackle spot opposite Ndamukong Suh. And the other is the fact that their linebacking core just, you know, they just haven't had it. I mean, all three of them really needed to be replaced starting last year. And so they began that process last year when they brought in Kiko Alonso. He actually played middle linebacker last year. They're moving him, I believe, to the weak side this year. He did help a lot. He actually played pretty well. Unfortunately, the other two guys, you know, the other two positions still are really, I mean, they were basically playing backups. And so this year in the offseason, they drafted Raekwon McMillan, and I think pretty much everyone knew second rounder, they were depending on this guy to step in and start at middle linebacker, and it looked like he was going to do that. He had a pretty good camp. And they signed Lawrence Timmons from Pittsburgh. And all of this really is aimed toward improving the run defense. They drafted a defensive tackle in the fifth round, Davin Gottschalk. You'd think a fifth rounder, you know, that'd be a roll of the dice, but he's actually looked pretty good. He's a pretty good two-gapping defensive tackle. But if you're going to have a guy like that who's going to be taking on double teams in this last preseason game they played, he spent a pretty good time, part of the time doing that. You need a linebacker who's going to attack the line of scrimmage and meet the running back in the hole. And once McMillan went down, they were stuck playing a guy, you know, who frankly didn't belong out there. I mean, you can't stand flat-footed 5 yards into the defensive backfield. And this is what Mike Hall would do. And he would meet the runner, you know, literally after he gained like 4 yards. And that's what he spent a good part of that preseason game doing. The linebacking core didn't get bad reviews from the media, but when I watched the game, that's certainly what I saw. And I think that's probably what the Dolphins saw. And they were, you know, dancing with Malaluga before that game. And I would guess that the tape of that game pretty much convinced them that they had to sign him. And so this is a pretty good signing for them. He'll be their middle linebacker. He's a good middle linebacker. He's good against the run. He will not play in their nickel package. And that's where he belongs. And I think he'll plug in there. I think they're going to be significantly better against the run this year. I think that is a problem that might actually be solved now. And I think Malaluga was, you know, in the absence of McMillan, I think he was the last piece they needed. I still have doubts about whether those linebackers are going to be able to cover running backs coming out of the backfield. And that's going to be something interesting for Dolphins fans to keep an eye on. But they had to stop the run. I mean, that's the first thing that any defense has to do, and they've just been miserable at it. Nobody would argue that. And so they've at least, I think, you know, taken care of that problem. So this was a big signing for them and probably one that they really needed.
Let me ask you a little bit about that too, Rob. You know, obviously Ray Malaluga and Lawrence Timmons, a couple of players from the AFC who I know you've seen a lot, and of course you've seen more Kiko Alonso than probably anybody. I mean, here's two guys on the wrong side of 30, and Kiko Alonso, I mean, I liked him a lot early in his career, but I feel like his play took a dip before he left for the Dolphins. Is this a starting caliber linebacker crew at this juncture?
Yeah, Kiko Alonso kind of built his reputation up the first, you know, four or five games that he played with the Buffalo Bills. Just was amazing. And that even had, like, the hashtag Legend of Kiko Alonso. However, I don't, you know, as the year went on, he didn't, in my opinion, and opinion of a lot of people, he didn't play as well, but he was still pretty good. And then, you know, the big trade for Buffalo, which has worked out great for us. They traded, they were able to trade him straight up for LeSean McCoy, you know, and, you know, with him, there's been, he's been a fairly injury plagued guy. He's always had a little something going on. I think him on the outside is a better fit than the inside personally, because he still has, I mean, you know, he still has a little bit of, you know, a little bit of movement to him. I think he's, you know, I mean, he just signed a pretty decent sized contract with the Dolphins, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, he's definitely in their plans. I'm interested to see what with Lawrence Timmons, because to me, Lawrence Timmons is always kind of like that 3-4 guy. So I'm interested to see kind of how he fits in with their defense. I feel like with the Dolphins, you know, watching it from my perspective, we've been able to run pretty well for the most part. Against the Dolphins, we've been able to run real well the past couple seasons, and you know, kind of hopeful that that's going to, you know, continue to happen this year.
Well, if it does, then they've got a problem, because that just can't continue with them. It's a huge issue.
That contract that Kiko Alonso signed, 3-year, $29 million. So Miami clearly believes in him to contribute that kind of money to a linebacker. All right, next news item I want to cover: Jeremy Zuta, former Raven, was traded to the 49ers. Then he was cut just a couple weeks ago. Now he's back on the Ravens. To me, the Ravens are probably the most injury-plagued team in the NFL this year, potentially. I look at this, this has to be a good deal for them. I mean, they basically have the same center they had last year, who was a Pro Bowler, if I'm not mistaken, plus whatever compensation they got in the trade. So it's like a quick vacation out to San Fran, and then Zuta's back. So let's go ahead and go back to you, Tom. Zuta just recently was considered one of the best centers in the league. Now he can't make one of the worst rosters in the NFL. I have no idea what to think of him as a player right now. What do you think?
I have no idea what to think of him as a player right now. That's not much of an answer, I know. But I have no explanation for what the problem has been. You know, he's named the Pro Bowl, you know, 2016, and I don't know why he struggled to make the 49ers roster. I don't know why the Ravens traded him, and I don't know why the 49ers. I don't know. I mean, maybe am I dreaming here? I don't really understand what the problem is exactly. There's a stink on him for some reason because he's getting passed around, you know, like a bad joint. I hate to say this. I know I'm not contributing anything to the conversation, but I'm baffled by what's going on here.
No, I'm glad I'm not the only one. I mean,
as far as the Ravens go, they're really injured, but you know what? They've looked pretty good in the preseason. I have no real explanation for that, but they've looked pretty good regardless. So I know a lot of people are predicting bad things for them, and they obviously needed him. They needed him back, but because they brought him back, but I have no explanation for what's going on really with the Ravens in general, and with this in particular really baffles me.
All right, Rob, help me out here. I think Tom and I are in the same position. We're baffled. I mean, you know, I look at transactions in the league, and I usually think that's the only time that teams are going to be honest with you. You know, every press conference, every presser, everything that they tell you, it has an agenda. There's a lie. But when they draft a player or cut a player or sign a player, that has to be honest. So does this mean he stinks? Like, what's going on with this guy?
I don't know. I mean, it's a silly situation, obviously, to go from Pro Bowler to traded to cut and then back to your original team. The one thing that I can think of maybe is that, kind of maybe with San Francisco, maybe a combination of a couple things. You know, they're going to be running that Shanahan zone blocking scheme. Maybe they felt like he was going to be a better fit than he actually was. And also maybe he's a negative locker room guy. And maybe the combination of the two, they're just like, we're done. Other than that, I can't really think of like a plausible explanation why you would give up a young team, would give up draft capital and to take someone and then get rid of them before you're out of your inaugural training camp. It just seems, kind of crazy. So I'm assuming he was just a bad fit for the scheme, either that or, maybe just, kind of rubbed the guys, the boys in the locker room the wrong way. And they felt they wanted to have, a different culture than he was bringing. And they felt, maybe good about someone younger, and they decided to just get rid of him.
Yeah, man, that's a tough one.
It's a theory. That's all it is. I don't know. Sure.
Well, that's all we're left with because you really don't know what goes on in the locker room for the most part. I mean, things like that just don't leak out that often. So that's basically what we're left with because it's the most unknown thing. So off-field issues is the only thing I can think of. I mean, he's not even really injury prone. I'm looking at his bio and he had a torn pec in 2015, but I think he was healthy last year. So I really don't understand it.
All right, guys, I want to change gears a little bit. Since we've got some super fans on here, let's check in on your teams, what you've seen in the preseason, what you saw of these most recent games. And Tom, I know I keep starting with you. Sorry, Rob, but since we haven't heard from you in a little while, let's go ahead and start with your Bears. And I think your Bears are very, very interesting, especially at the quarterback position. So why don't you just tell us a little bit about what's going on in Chicago?
Yeah, well, I think most of the football world knows that they traded up to draft Mitch Trubisky second overall. And they have insisted that basically he will not play this year if they get their way, which basically, from their point of view, at least they're hoping, it means unless Mike Glennon, who they also signed to basically be the starter this year, unless he gets hurt, Trubisky will never see the field. So they went out the first preseason game against Denver, and frankly, Glennon stunk it up. The rest of the offense did as well, but Glennon didn't help. He looked bad on his own. Believe me, we're gonna talk about what you look for in the preseason, and I did my best to evaluate him independent of the rest of the offense, and it wasn't very good. He had a 0.0 passer rating, and he deserved every bit of it. The second preseason game, which was last night, Saturday night, he looked a little better. He's still not good. The offense overall looked better, and that also helped him out. The offensive line actually did a much better job of blocking, and some guys did a better job of getting open. Of course, all that helps, but he struggles. He's struggling with his accuracy, and he was really up and down last night. The starters played the entire first half. They basically treated this as the third preseason game, almost exactly like it. They didn't come out in the third quarter, but they played a lot, and they needed it. The starters needed it. They didn't look good really until they were playing second teamers. He's kind of a worry right now, and if he continues to not play well, there's going to be a great deal of pressure on the Bears to play the rookie and throw him in there and get him some experience. I personally hope they resist that, and I think they probably will. It looks to me like Trubisky is not ready. He looked good in that first preseason game. They played to his strengths. He spent a lot of time in the shotgun rather than under center because he played in a spread offense in college. They rolled him out a lot, which cuts the field in half. So it cuts all his reads in half, and that helped him out a lot. And he was very comfortable on the move. And so all that stuff helped him, and he looked pretty good. It was very encouraging. He looked like a pro. He really did. Even when he was in the pocket, he would move in the pocket. He was fine in throwing lanes. He had that look about him. And so if you're a Bears fan, you've got a lot of hope. He didn't look as good Saturday night. He didn't look that bad, but he was also up and down. And there are two reasons for that. One is the backups played a lot better against him this week. So that really helped an awful lot. I thought Arizona's backups did a really good job of covering the Bears receivers. They got some pressure on him. So he naturally didn't look good because of that as good. The other thing is they had him under center the majority of the time last night. They didn't have him in shotgun as much. They didn't have him rolling out as much. They had him throwing from the pocket. They had him doing full field reads. They were asking him to do more this time, 9 days later, than they were asking in the first game. And he struggled more. And it should be an indication, if you're a Bears fan, that, you know, this guy's not ready. And that should be a surprise to no one. The best thing for him is probably going to be to sit the whole year. We'll find out if they can actually, you know, hold to that and stand behind that and keep him out. Glennon's going to have to play better if they're going to be competitive. And if he doesn't play better, then late in the season, they're going to be out of it. And there's going to be a lot of pressure to put Trubisky in. And my guess is they probably will. We're all kind of hoping that won't happen, though. I'd like to see him get a redshirt season. I'd like to see Glennon succeed. He looked a lot better as a Buccaneer to my eyes when I watched him than he looks right now. And that gives me hope that he can play better than this. But on the other hand, he needs to play better than this. And he needs to do it fairly quickly. Next time's the third preseason game. That's going to be the last action he sees, probably. And if they're having trouble with the timing on the routes, you know, if the wide receivers are struggling, which it looks like they are, they're a pedestrian group, they're going to have to get themselves together quickly, or it's going to be a really rough start to the season.
Now, I know he wasn't able to play this week because of an eye injury, but what have you seen out of Jordan Howard so far in the preseason?
Very little. He played very little in the first preseason game. I can't remember how many carries he had, but I'd be surprised if it was more than three or four. And so it's a little hard to tell how Jordan Howard's been doing. They're holding him out. They're going to be depending upon him a great deal. If you watch the Bears right now, they're playing a lot of double tight end, and they're running a lot, and it's very evident that they're going to depend on the power running game. It looked pretty good against Arizona, but it's worth noting that, you know, I know all defenses play vanilla during the preseason, but Arizona played vanilla by preseason standards, and they did nothing special to really stop the run. So the Bears had double tight end, and they were running against seven in the box, and they had some success against that. I don't think that's going to happen during the year. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I think that they're depending upon Howard a lot. They're depending a lot on Tariq Cohen. He is a rookie that they drafted this year, and he has looked very good. He's a little guy. He's only about 185 pounds, and I think that's probably soaking wet. But he's quick. He's elusive. He's got some quicks about him. I like the look of him. I like him a lot better than I thought he was going to be. A lot of these little guys look good until the pads come on, and then they disappear. And that does not look like it's happening with him. So they could use him as a third down back if he can block. And he hasn't proven to me that he can do that yet. They haven't asked him to do it a whole lot. He's lining up on passes, but so far he's been going out for little dumps out of the backfield. He hasn't really had to do a lot of blocking yet. So we're going to find out eventually if he can protect the quarterback. If he can, that's going to be really helpful. And they're going to have some depth at running back. I think everybody's pretty happy with the look of that. It's the passing game that everyone should be worried about, and I think with some justification.
All right, Rob, let's go back to you now. When you did your kind of post-game recap of the Bills, you were not very happy with the offense and with kind of the way the offense is being constructed, but you are pretty happy with the defense. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what's going on there in Buffalo?
Yeah, so obviously the Bills kind of blew the whole thing up at the beginning, you know, after the season last year. I have a new coach, so that means you have new systems in place. So, you know, for me, you know, it was real exciting kind of see, you know, how Tyrod Taylor was going to fit in. And, man, I just, you know, the more, and I realize it's preseason, so you can't take too much stock because clearly the Bills aren't playing, they're not giving you Rocky Road, they're giving you vanilla. He doesn't look to be, you know, looks to be a little bit more of that West Coast timing offense, and he's not really a good fit for that. And, you know, that's just not his skill set. He's a fantastic deep ball thrower. I would say he's one of the best in the league at throwing the deep pass. You know, unfortunately, they traded his best deep threat option, in Sammy Watkins, who's also his number one receiver. And you saw, you know, when those two play together, you know, he was throwing about 40 to 50% of his passes Sammy Watkins' way last year, or not last year, the year before when he was healthy. So he's taken a big security blanket away. They've taken a big security blanket away from him, and they've kind of replaced all the receivers with slot guys, which is a real, you know, I mean, which takes away any legitimate threat of a deep ball, which is just going to be real. I think as the season goes on, it's going to be real tough. But they're going to, you know, Anquan Boldin is a definite slot guy at this point in his career. Jordan Matthews, who the Bills got in a trade with the Eagles, you know, for Darby, who is their number one cornerback. And I think, you know, he's a, you know, more of like an inside guy. I don't think he's really in the Buffalo Bills plans past this year. I think they traded for him because he's in a contract year and he's going to probably get him another compensatory pick, which is, you know, they're obviously looking, you know, to pick up as many draft picks as possible. And Zay Jones, who I think is capable of playing on the outside, and he did so well when Peterman got in the game and they against Philly, but it was against, you know, it was against the combination of the ones and the twos. So it's, you know, taken with a little grain of salt, obviously. But Zay Jones in his college career played in the slot 75-80% of the time. So he's kind of a slot guy in college that they're trying to transition, you know, to the outside. And he's not a speed merchant by any stretch. And, you know, the receiver behind them, you know, another just big, you know, big, slow lumbering guys for the most part. So I worry about, you know, you're right. I worry about the way the offense is constructed because the bread and butter is going to be the run, you know, running the ball. That's what we've done well. We finished, you know, number one in running each of the past 2 years. And now there's, you know, now you have teams that are going to just, you know, play up close because they really have no one. The Bills have no one to take the top off of the defense. Whereas in prior years they did, because even last year, you know, they did have, they did have weapons that could do it. Now this year, they absolutely have no one that could do it. The closest guy was Rod Streeter, who was a free agent. And he actually hurt himself in the game. And no one knows if he's even going to be around for the year. The Bills' defense looks kind of fun, though. So I guess we got that going for us. They're switching from the 3-4 that Rex Ryan was running, which was just god-awful, to, you know, more of a 4-3. Actually, you know, kind of that cover 2, cover 3 defense, you know, that you'd seen out of McDermott before in Carolina that he was pretty successful with. But that means a lot more zone as opposed to man-to-man, which is what made Darby, you know, even though he was the number one cornerback, I guess the reports come out in Buffalo, he wasn't buying into the system, you know, so they got rid of him. I was fine getting rid of him. I actually think EJ Gaines, because he's a primarily a zone guy, will just be a better fit, you know, for what they're going to do. He's also in the, you know, last year of his contract, so we'll see what happens with that. But that could kind of be along the same lines, you know, as Jordan Matthews, at least with their thinking. But the front four has looked really good. Jerry Hughes looks like the guy that they had a couple years ago, just being a terror. You know, it's going to be fun to see kind of Marcel Darius and Kyle Williams, you know, playing together and not dropping into coverage 20% of the plays. So defense, I feel good about. The offense, I think it's going to be a long year. But, I mean, clearly if you're trading your number one receiver and your number one cornerback who are both on their rookie contracts, you're not necessarily anticipating having the best year. But, you know, the good news is the Bills will, you know, after compensatory picks, probably have 8 of the first 105 draft picks. So onward and upward, I guess.
That's not too bad when you put it that way. So as far as my Seahawks go, the big news coming out of week 2 is our offensive line, which seems to be the story every week. Justin Britt signed an extension, which I think he absolutely deserved. You know, he was not good as a tackle, not good as a guard. Turned out to be a really good center, Pro Bowl alternate last year. So I'm happy to see that. But the big bummer is George Fant. George Fant was named the starting left tackle pretty much right before the game for week 1 and ends up getting his leg rolled up on, torn ACL, out for the season. And that's awful. He was the left tackle for most of last year, too. He wasn't really supposed to be. I mean, he's a guy who had never played offensive line before playing in the NFL, and suddenly he's the starting left tackle on one of the better teams in the league. After an entire offseason to actually learn the position, put on 25 pounds of muscle, he was looking really, really good. You know, as somebody who's watching the offensive line really closely, he was not a guy that I saw as a major problem. Him being gone is a major problem. The team's got some options. Reese Odhiambo is a guy that they brought in as a potential left tackle. He'd kind of been competing with George Fant, but he's not nearly as good, which that's a kind of sad thing to say about a guy who's a career tackle versus a dude playing college basketball. Luke Jokel, you know, was a very high draft pick, picked to be a left tackle. Never really succeeded there, but he's available. Sacks also picked up some nobody off of waivers. So, I mean, there's an option. I've heard some talk that, you know, at least some suggestions that they should go give Brandon Albert a look. I'd be fine with that. They've got a little bit of cap space. I'm sure he wouldn't be that expensive. That's probably their best option. But, I mean, let's be honest. There's not 32 starting left tackles in this league, let alone, you know, enough to start covering for injuries and backups and things like that. So that's really a shame. Other than that, though, the rest of the team just looks like dynamite. I mean, this is going to be a really, really tough out for anybody. The running back stable is really, really strong. Eddie Lacy looks better than he has in a few years. Thomas Rawls didn't play this week. He just had a kind of a minor injury. If it was regular season, he would have played, so I'm not worried about him. CJ Procise, similar thing, had a bit of a groin tweak, so he didn't play. But the backups to the backups were great. And so I feel really, really strong about that. The wide receivers are amazing. Doug Baldwin is incredible. Russell Wilson hasn't thrown a single off-target pass this preseason. All of his incompletions were either throwaways or were in locations where he gave his guy a chance to make a play. I mean, this offense is incredibly dialed in, and that's without having seen Jimmy Graham yet, who has had his first full, healthy offseason with the team. So I don't know. Offensively, I feel really, really good about what this team is doing. Chris Carson, you know, he's one of their rookie running backs. He was a seventh round pick. I think he's going to cost Alex Collins, who was a late round pick, a job. Both have been okay, but Alex Collins has never really impressed. He had a late fumble, and Chris Carson, dude's like 230, nothing but muscle. He is jacked, and he runs with some authority. So really, really liking him. On the other side of the ball, you know, all that depth I keep talking about has shown up over and over again. Shaquille Griffin got to play basically the entire game, which is, I think, what he needs. He just needs reps in the system. But he looks like he's going to be a really good player. Earl Thomas laid another big hit, just like he did the week before. So he looks like he's coming back strong. You know, they played incredibly vanilla, but it was pretty much Seahawks football, just forcing people into third downs. The one moment from the game, though, that I really, really enjoyed was when Blair Walsh, he missed a kick earlier in the game for 53 yards. But I mean, it was right on the target. It was just a little bit short, hit the crossbar, but I mean, he had wind coming into him. I wasn't worried about that. Nails a 52-yarder and goes over to the Viking sideline, and you see him just point. And I think he was pointing at the head coach, because obviously they cut him last year. I love seeing that. A little bit of attitude obviously fits in well on this team. So, yeah, man, I'm feeling very, very strong about my Seahawks. I think Russell Wilson's in line for a huge year. But the biggest question mark, that offensive line, just got a little bit more tenuous.
Yeah, of course, it's always the offensive line there, isn't it? I agree with you on with the running backs. I think they're great. I think Thomas Rawls and C.J. Procise and Eddie Lacy. Lacy was with the Packers for so long, and I always waited for everything to, like, fall together for him and for him to just destroy everybody for 1 year, because he just had that look about him, but he was never able to put it together. But I was glad to see him leave the division. I was tired of holding my breath. I was overreacting, but I don't think I was. I think there's a lot of potential there. I like Thomas Rawls, always did. So I think that's great. I think you guys are set, except for that offensive line. That's always the issue. And I wish they could fix it. They're not alone. It's just a chronic problem throughout the league. And I don't really know how to fix it, but I know that the offensive lines of so many teams, including Arizona, who I just saw play the Bears, they're just going to go as far as their offensive line is going to take them. And I don't know how to solve that issue. I've been told that the shortage is because all the athletic linemen become defensive linemen, and you're left without good offensive linemen to match up against them. I don't know if that's true, but I know that it's just become a serious issue around the league, and the Seahawks are just another one of those teams, you know, where it looks to me like they're just going to go as far as that line will take them.
Yeah, there's so few, and it seems like so few come out of school, and it might be because of that athletic difference. I mean, and you know, the way that they play offensive line in college is very different from the way they do it in the NFL. I don't think people realize that. I mean, you know, that largely spread offense kind of permeation you see in college has a huge impact on the way the offensive line is played. And so, yeah, so few guys who come up. I mean, think of the number of teams in college, in Division I, how many offensive linemen there are across the board, and then look at how few make it as a player in the NFL at all. We're talking, you go from hundreds and hundreds of offensive linemen to what, one or two dozen? And again, and I'm just talking like the starters from college, let alone like the backups and third string. Meanwhile, you have teams like the Seahawks who are turning defensive linemen and college basketball players into offensive line.
Yeah, your point's well taken. I mean, I'm a Missouri alumnus, and I watched them play that spread offense. And it looks, there's more to it than this, but it looks like they're literally just standing up and just turning one way or the other and sort of like just redirecting the linemen. And of course, it just doesn't work that way in the pros. So these guys are asked to do something completely different, unless they're coming out of some place like Alabama. And I think that's one reason amongst many that, you know, players from Alabama are so popular in the league. They're playing pro style there, where a lot of other teams just aren't doing that. So I think you're probably right. I mean, it's probably really tough on scouts. It's probably every bit as tough for offensive linemen, almost as tough as it is for quarterbacks. If you interviewed one and they told you that, it wouldn't surprise me in the least.
Yeah. All right. So, Tom, everybody knows that you are the Chicago Bears super fan. Not a lot of people know that you also write and kind of follow the Dolphins beat. So let's talk a little bit about the Dolphins too. We mentioned them earlier at the linebacker position, but obviously they've had about as crazy a last 3 weeks as you could have at the quarterback position with Jay Cutler coming in. So I want to get your thoughts on that while we've got you. We haven't really had we've been trying to get Andy, the Dolphins fan, on here, but due to scheduling conflicts, it's been kind of tough to pull off. What do you think about that? What did you see out of him in his first action?
I'll be interested to hear what Andy has to say about this, but as somebody who saw virtually every pass that Jay Cutler threw in Chicago, I have very strong opinions about him. Most of the people in the group know that they're not very positive opinions, but this is going to shock a lot of people. I love the signing for the Dolphins. Adam Gase, their head coach, was the Bears offensive coordinator for a year. And during that year, Cutler looked better than he ever looked in Chicago and maybe ever looked ever anywhere, including Denver, including his Pro Bowl year. He was way more comfortable with Adam Gase than he was with just about any of the offensive coordinators that he had, and there were quite a number of them. He didn't get along with many of them, and he got along with Gase. Cutler was, gone. He was retired. He was going to do announcing. And I have a feeling that this was probably one of the few situations that would have actually gotten him back out there because he's so comfortable with Adam Gase. It's just an ideal situation. Gase is, he's pretty good. He's a real good coach. I'm real impressed by him. I was impressed by him as a coordinator, impressed by him as their head coach down there. He does a real good job of adjusting to his personnel. He talks about it a lot. You can tell he's thinking about it constantly. And he did that with Cutler. He did it in two ways. First, he tailored the scheme. It was this short passing scheme that really seemed to really help Cutler in that it kept him from making a lot of the bad decisions that he's so well known for. And it really minimized things like his interceptions, his fumbled turnovers, stuff like that. The other thing that he did, it was the same thing that he did with Ryan Tannehill when he started there with Tannehill, gave him a little bit more control at the line of scrimmage. And I think that Cutler returned that trust in him by trusting Gase. And it's something that's very hard for him to do. He doesn't trust. It's obvious he doesn't trust many people. I watch coordinator after coordinator after coordinator in Chicago try to get that guy to throw with anticipation to a receiver, and he would not do it. He'd do it in little bursts, and then all of a sudden he'd throw the ball, and nobody would be there because the wide receiver didn't get there, and it'd be an interception, and then poof, Cutler's confidence was gone. He didn't trust anybody, and all of a sudden he was this see-it-throw-it quarterback again that was trying to use his arm strength to get the ball in. And, that just doesn't work against really, really good teams in the NFL. They just don't give you enough room to allow that to happen. You have to be able to throw before the guy gets open. Gase was the only guy that got him to do that. And so I have high hopes that Miami is going to bring the best out in him, and he may actually perform better. This is going out on a limb, but I would say he will not be a drop-off from Ryan Tannehill, and he might actually perform better than Tannehill would have. It's entirely possible. They've got a much better group of receivers there than they had in Chicago. Chicago was almost always short on receivers, and they've got a pretty good group down there. So I think he's got a lot of weapons. They got a decent running game to help support him. I think he's got everything he needs to succeed. And I think we might see, Robert might not want to hear this, we might see some good things out of them this year. The only thing that might hold them back, they had some injuries in training camp. You got to be able to overcome those. It's got to be next guy up. And last year they did it to some extent. This year they may have to do it more. But if they can do that, they may compete for a playoff spot again this year. And I think that'll make a lot of people happy.
All right, guys. So there you have it. A quick kind of I don't say around the league because we didn't cover the whole league, but some super fan perspective on the teams that we know best. Next thing I want to do is I want to talk about watching preseason games. And not just, you know, sitting down, you know, getting a adult beverage and some chips and rooting with your team. But I know that, especially with Rob and with Tom, and I like to think to myself and some of the other super fans, you know, we like to look at a lot more than just kind of rooting along in the preseason games. We kind of go in with an agenda and we start looking at a few specific things that, you know, can translate into who makes the team, you know, who's going to do well, you know, once the season starts, which of these things translate? Because obviously not everything translates. A lot of these things you have to take with a grain of salt, right? You know, when Johnny from Little School U comes in the fourth quarter of week one and lights it up, you know, reminding yourself that he's playing against people who are largely not going to be in the NFL in 4 weeks. So, Rob, for the first time ever today, let's start with you. When you are watching a preseason game, take us through your mind, you know, where are your eyes going? What are you thinking about? You know, what are some maybe some tips for somebody who wants to kind of look a little bit more with some evaluation at preseason?
All right. So for me, obviously, the preseason, you're not going to get the whole playbook out. You're going to see a lot of a little bit more of a vanilla scheme. So for me, things that I look for personally is, you know, kind of how teams address sub packages and things like that. Like right now, you know, I'm the receivers for the Buffalo Bills, for instance. I'm interested to see like who they do have lining up inside. You know, because to me it is kind of, you know, a little bit of a jumbled mess. So I'm trying to, you know, get an idea, you know, from their perspective, what they're trying to do, you know, with the wide receiver depth chart. You know, and also things like rotations, like, so defensive end, the Bills are running a 4-3. So they have a lot of new defensive ends on those like second and third teams that weren't there last year, wouldn't have been fits on last year's team, but now, you know, might be a little bit of a better fit. There's a kid by the name of Eddie Yarborough, who has kind of bounced around the league, but it looks like he's probably found a home in Buffalo. You know, it's, you know, he's been the kind of the first defensive end to go in with the starters, you know, to kind of spell some players, so they can get a rest. So, you know, I'm looking at, I try to look at things like that, seeing, you know, who the, you know, cause they're going to the guys that they like, the guys that they're going to be in those first and second teams. That's going to be, you know, kind of who they bring in. You know, any type of, you know, prospects that, you know, for me, there's always like a player or two that I really try to keep an eye on. I know Tariq Cohen got mentioned by Tom. I love that guy. I actually mentioned him on one of our draft podcasts probably 2 months before the draft. You know, he would be like an ideal guy for me, you know, for Chicago, you know, but, you know, for the Bills, you know, kind of finding, you know, an intriguing guy, and keeping tabs on him. For me this year, it's kind of Logan Thomas. The name sounds familiar to you. It's because he was the quarterback at Virginia Tech, was then drafted in, I believe, the sixth round, by the Arizona Cardinals. Played with them, actually got a couple starts when Carson Palmer was injured. The quarterback thing didn't pan out, but he's a big-bodied, athletic kid. So it's kind of fun to see him, you know, work his way up. And he's kind of worked his way into that, you know, second and third role tight ends. But I'm pretty sure he's going to make the roster, which is fun. And paying attention.
How much do you care about stats? Like, are you?
For the most part, I could care less about stats. I don't really pay too much attention to that. I may pay attention to things like targets, you know, maybe a little bit. Like, it felt like the Bills, like week one, they were forcing the ball to Sammy Watkins. Little did we know, the next day they were going to trade him, so it was probably an audition. So that wasn't really, you know, a telltale. But, you know, kind of seeing, like, targets, kind of seeing, you know, especially for like a new player that's running with the first team, you know, is Tyrod, is he looking, you know, more towards it? Is he looking towards Zay Jones as much as he's looking at some of the other guys, or, you know, kind of how they're spreading it out? He's been looking a lot towards Charles Clay, which is a pleasant surprise because he didn't really throw to the tight end too much So targets for me are honestly more important, and like that and like snap count on sub packages are more important than, you know, things like who got three, you know, who got three catches, you know, things like that, you know, because I mean, if you're going against a second team defense, you know, and you still have your starters in and things like that happen in the preseason, you know, fairly regularly, you know, it can definitely have an effect on what the stat lines will look like. But I'm more, you know, concerned about how they're getting there, you know, I guess would be the best way to describe it.
So, Tom, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that you really could not care less about the actual final score on the scoreboard when these games end, right?
Oh, as long as it's not a tie, man. I hate it. Nobody wants to see overtime. We've got a reporter here that I follow on Twitter, and last night the Cardinals scored a late touchdown, and so it was 24-23 with the extra point to go, and thank goodness Arizona decided to go for two and not send that sucker into overtime. So, you know, thank goodness, you know, the Cardinals, you know, going for coaching staff of the year already, man.
I love that that's an unwritten rule. Like, you do not, under any circumstance, try and play yourself into, like, a tie in preseason. Like, nobody wants the extra wear and tear. Man. Yeah, I love that. So,
extra injuries.
So, Tom, what's going through your mind when the game is starting? Like, what do you want to pay attention to? Because, you know, like Rob just discussed, it's really not, you don't really care if he had four carries for 20 yards or whatever.
Yeah, I actually really do like watching the starters. Of course, they're the guys you're going to be watching during the year, so I think that's natural enough. It's awfully hard to evaluate anybody, as you guys know, because just like Rob said, most teams, not all of them, but the vast majority play pretty vanilla during the preseason. You get a guy like Jeff Fisher who will just want to come out and take it to you in the preseason. You know, those are teams that can look awful good in isolated games. But you have to look and, you know, you can look and you can see. So the first thing I do is I start looking at personnel packages and see what the offense is playing, how the defense is countering it. Like I said earlier, you know, last night the Bears were running the ball, double tight end. They were, you know, stacking the middle of the field. They had virtually no passing game. During a regular season, you're Arizona, you bring an eighth guy down in the box. They weren't doing that. So that's because they were playing a vanilla defense. They weren't showing anything, and they wanted their starters to – they wanted to try to stop them with seven guys, where during the season they might not have wanted to do that. So you're trying to evaluate the game while bearing all that in mind. Or if the offense stinks, you want to try to evaluate an individual player independent of what the guys around them are doing. It's awfully hard to do, but I'm convinced that it can be done.
Yeah, I mean, that's the hard part, though, right? I mean, trying to put things in the right context.
Exactly.
Because it's not just a normal game.
So, you know, let's take running back, for instance. You know, whenever you evaluate a running back, you know, my grandmother could run through a hole that you could drive a truck through. So that's not going to impress me all that much. So the team's doing really well and he looks really good, but he's barely being touched. What you want to do is you want to see how many yards he's making on his own. What happens when that first guy hits him and tries to tackle him, and how many more yards after that does he make? You know, how many guys does he make miss? Those are things that guys do independent of what the team around them is doing. If you're watching a quarterback, you watch and see how accurate he is. You know, Mike Glennon was inaccurate last night. And, you know, you could see that independent of pretty much what was going on around him. I mean, maybe the wide receivers weren't running the precise routes they needed to. But there were some obvious situations where he was just struggling to put the ball where it needed to be. And so that's something that you can evaluate. You can say, you know, he needs to be more accurate, independent of how much the offense is helping him or not.
I think that's a great point, you know, for the quarterback, right? It's, you know, they're not running typically very complex concepts. There's not a whole lot of scheming specific to that defense going on. in most cases, and sometimes it's not even the wide receivers that they're going to be playing with come week one. And so, yeah, that's what I like. I like to look at ball placement. You know, is when he threw that, did the ball go where he wanted it to go? Which, you know, at the NFL level doesn't happen as much as you would necessarily think. And was that a good decision? You know, did he throw it right into like obvious double coverage? You know, did he hit a defender in the chest? What about you, Rob? What are you watching at the quarterback position?
Yeah, I think it's kind of, you know, accuracy is, you know, the big thing. Like I harped on, you know, Tyrod Taylor, you know, because, and the reason is because his accuracy and the timing routes was not good. You know, so it's not even, you know, it's not the stat line, but it's, you know, kind of the story of how the stat line got there. And it was, you know, inaccurate passes. The Philly game it's almost tough. Like we're talking about, you know, some coaches like to play, you know, a pretty aggressive style in the preseason game. Some don't. Unfortunately for the Bills, they were going against their old defensive coordinator who tends to apparently hold a grudge, and they were literally blitzing on every play. So it was, you know, kind of a wild game. But his ball, you know, so what I look for with quarterbacks, you know, kind of where they're putting the ball. Are there, you know, how quick they're getting it out? You know, if they're sitting in the pocket longer than Lent, you know, things like that.
Yeah, for me on the offensive side of the ball, usually I'll start with my eyes on the offensive line. Some of that is because my Seahawks are usually not great there. But, you know, that tells you a whole lot right off the bat. And so usually I'll watch that. And then you'll know immediately if it's going to be a run or a pass play, typically. Usually if it's a run, all the offensive linemen are going to, you know, shoot forward in the defensive line and try and get a push. And then you can see right there if they're making any holes, if they're getting a push, or if the defense is penetrating, getting in the backfield. And then, you know, so, you know, usually that's what I'll do is I'll watch the line real quick. Then I'll shift my eyes to where I think the ball is going to be. On passing downs, obviously, you see them post up in their pass sets, usually take a step or two back, start to form a pocket. And, you know, watching that, you know, that's where I'm seeing, you know, in these past 2 weeks, Jermaine Ifedi, for example, first round pick from last year, getting honestly schooled multiple times by other starters. And, you know, he's a guy I'm really, really worried about, you know. And then, you know, once again, you know, it's all about that context. Once I have that context, then, you know, the running back, you know, then you can see how he does. I mean, you know, I don't really care if he ran for 30 yards on his limited touches. What I want to see is, you know, if he's got good blocking, is he, you know, picking up chunks of yardage? If he's got bad blocking, is he getting dropped in the backfield? You know, is he making guys miss? You know, same goes for the quarterback. You know, if he is, you know, having, if he's not able to get his throws off, you know, I'm not gonna, you know, all of a sudden decide that he's a terrible guy. So, you know, that's what I like to do. I like to look at that, the line, and then kind of follow the ball.
Yeah,
the
line is practically the only thing, let's be honest, on television that you can watch. It's the only thing that's really on the screen all the time.
Yeah,
I find it to be extremely difficult to watch wide receivers and watch coverages. And a lot of times it's really difficult to figure out what coverage teams are in because, you know, a lot of stuff happens off screen and you don't know unless you're watching the All 22 on NFL Game Pass later on. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I think that's a really good point. I think you have to watch line play. But in all honesty, in my experience, you know, maybe you guys could disagree. You know, skill position players, they get all the love. But in my experience, 80% of the time, if you watch a game, the team that's winning the line of scrimmage is probably going to win the game. If they can do it consistently throughout the game, they're probably going to win. And so arguably you're watching the most important part of the game.
Yeah,
I
mean, that's very reasonable. What about on the flip side? Again, you know, some teams are a little bit blitz happy in the preseason. A lot of teams don't, like, they don't like to do stunts and kind of show their hand on some of you know, the twists and stuff that they'll run during the season. So Rob, how do you watch defense?
I mean, with the defense, I think a big part, you know, starting right away is kind of the push. You know, you're talking about winning offensive, you know, defensive line battles. You know, it's kind of, you know, the same thing to a certain degree. You know, seeing, you know, if they're getting the push. Who is who's kind of doing well, like on the inside, who's doing well with a double team, you know, who's beating their guy on the outside. You know, things like that, seeing if, you know, they're being active. They're putting their hands up when the quarterback's throwing the ball. You know, just kind of things like that, just, you know, for me. But I think the biggest thing is just kind of getting it, you know, seeing if they're getting the push, if they're kind of winning those battles on the offensive line.
Yeah, totally. I completely agree. I mean, if I'm watching a player and he doesn't have necessarily like any tackles or any sacks, but on every play, he's in the backfield just being disruptive and nasty and in their face, I feel really good about this guy going forward. What about you, Tom?
I absolutely agree with that. I think it's probably the most important thing to watch at any time, preseason or not. Other things that I kind of like to look for, again, I'm paying attention to what's on screen most of the time. So that means, you know, line play and linebackers. And I mentioned the Miami linebacker situation earlier. You want to see those guys play downhill. You want to see them attack guys in the hole in the run game. You want to see them pick up tight ends in coverage until they run off screen. You want to see them pick up running backs out of the backfield. Those are largely plays where, once again, you can actually evaluate the player. I mean, the player itself, the odds are good he's in man coverage, and especially on the running back. And you can evaluate the player in isolation, independent of what's going on around him. A lot of the times now, you know, it's awful hard to play the run if the defensive linemen are getting pushed back into your lap. But if that's not happening, you know, you can evaluate the linebackers and see what kind of linebacker player you're getting. And it makes a huge difference. Again, a lot of the time, the difference between a really good defensive team and one that's not that good, the team that has the linebackers that can read the play and attack the line of scrimmage, they're the ones that win. Pittsburgh's really good at it. That is another thing that I sort of like to keep an eye on. I do try to keep an eye on the formations, see what kind of coverages teams are trying to throw up. A lot of times it's guesswork, but certainly you can tell if they're in man coverage. And if they're in press coverage, that can be a lot of fun to watch. And you can watch the cornerbacks battle the wide receivers a lot of times one-on-one and see who wins those battles. And those are pretty enjoyable to watch. Again, until they come off screen, and then of course you get a chance to watch it on the replay. I like that. So I usually try to keep an eye on that as well. And that'll tell you an awful lot about what the defense thinks of the team that they're playing. If they think they can play a man-to-man, then that means they don't think very much of their wide receiver core. And especially if they're pressing them, that means that that offense might be in big trouble because they're being challenged to come up with a big play and beat those cornerbacks who are on the line of scrimmage in the face of the wide receiver, basically taking a chance that they're going to get behind them. And if you're an offense and you can't overcome that, you're dead. You're going to have a miserable season. And I've seen it over and over again. If you're a Bears fan, every single one, we've all seen that. So that's something that I kind of like to watch. And a lot of the times it'll come out in the preseason. You'll see teams try it with their cornerbacks because they want to give their cornerbacks work. And then their cornerbacks will dominate your wide receivers, and you're going to go, uh-oh, I'm going to see that a lot this year.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I think that's almost kind of the overarching thing of the theme of the preseason is you're almost not looking at whole units playing like you do during a regular season. It's more about individual performances, right? Like, did this guy beat his guy? You know, if I'm looking at just this player, and you almost need to, especially if you're following like your preferred team, that's when it really helps to know who all the players are, right? So, you know, you recognize their names, you know that, okay, this guy's fighting for this job at this position. So you can, again, kind of isolate him and look at, okay, I know that Russell Wilson's going to be my quarterback no matter what, right? And so, yeah, right. Seeing him be amazing is cool, but like, you know, just going back to the offensive line example, like I don't know that Jermaine Ifedi is going to be right tackle, so I'm going to watch just him. Oh man, he got embarrassed. That sucks. Same thing on the other side, where it's like, okay, you know, I don't know who's going to be the other, you know, the other defensive end on pass rush packages. All right, oh, they got Cassius Marsh in there. Okay, I'm going to keep an eye on him. You know, I'm maybe not worried whether or not they get this conversion per se, but how is he doing? You know, is he getting back there? Is he getting stonewalled? It's really about the individual in the preseason in a lot of cases. And then especially if when they go into like special teams packages and you recognize some of these same players, right? Oh, here's that wide receiver that I like, and he just made a tackle on special teams. I'm sure the team really likes that sort of thing.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to watch a lot of these players on the back end, especially if you don't know the team that you're watching. But a lot of times what you're watching are guys that are going to make the team on special teams. And so special teams play can be, it's especially challenging because there aren't that many special teams plays to evaluate, but it's so critically important. And if you see a team, particularly one individual guy, completely blow it, then you know that guy is really in jeopardy because that's basically how he's going to make the team. And your point about quarterback is well taken as well. You know, Aaron Rodgers played in their last preseason game, which I don't think he played at all last year. But if you're a Packers fan, I'm sure you're thrilled to see him take the field as long as he doesn't get hurt. But you don't really care how he does. You don't care how Tom Brady does. You know, you're wasting your time if you're watching preseason games so you can watch Tom Brady. I think we all know what he's going to do during the year. You want to see the guys that are around him and watch the guys that, you know, you really want to see how they do, the guys that you think are going to be the guys that are going to really make the difference, you know, whether they develop or not, especially guys entering their second year that you're looking to take the next step. I was watching Tennessee the other day and Derrick Henry, they're starting to line him up in the slot. That was so cool to watch. And although he didn't get much in the way of passes thrown his way, you can tell they're planning on doing that this year. They're going to expand his role, and that exotic smash mouth is going to add a little bit of an extra dimension where, you know, they're going to line up and they're going to bring in run personnel, and then they're going to send a guy like Henry out and they're going to send him out for little passes. And if he can catch the ball, man, you know, that guy's going to be really good. And he's going to make yet another jump. That's really cool to see. And that's the kind of thing I think you watch the preseason for.
That I could not put that any better. So I think we'll wrap up on that, Tom. That was excellently put. So guys, that's going to do it for another episode of the Next Fan Up podcast. I want to thank Rob. I want to thank Tom. I definitely want to thank you for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please like us, share us, leave us a review on iTunes or whatever your preferred platform is. Don't forget that we're still involved in the Two Pods a Day. So you can search the hashtag Two Pods a Day on Twitter and Facebook. I think we actually got our own push, I want to say, a couple days ago. So that's really
nice. Yeah, the 18th.
Yep. So that was the Friday, I think. Pay attention to that. Please, we really recommend listening to all these independent podcasts that are being mentioned on there. You can find us on Twitter at NFU Podcast. Rob, if we wanted to find you on Twitter, where would we find you?
You would go to Buffalo_Sauced.
All right. And Tom, where would we find you?
I'm at Bearing the News, all one word.
And I'm at Koreis, that's at Koreis. You can also find our website, nextfanup.wordpress.com. You can shoot us an email. We are still looking for Bucks and Lions superfan. That's going to be nextfanup@gmail.com. With that, let's turn it over to Landry Jones. There you have it.
Next week will be next week. Today I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to go back home and hang out.